I've come back to the half-derelict station in Prague Bubny, across the road from where I live. A train is passing without stopping. Today, most of the sidings are unused and rusting. It was from here that Rudolf, Ida and Martin were sent to Terezin on the 30th of January 1942, after being held for 3 days in a group of sheds nearby, known as the Radio Market. By a strange coincidence, the Radio Market is just a few dozen meters from one of Rudolf Wels's most accomplished buildings, an elegant apartment block on the corner of Veverkova and Hershmanova streets. The whole building is clad in cream-coloured ceramic tiles. It turns the corner in an elegant curve. The entrance is lined with white marble. It is clean and modern, even today, over 80 years later. Standing outside the building, I'm within sight of the place where Rudolf, Ida and Martin were made to wait. It's quite possible that they could see this building as they waited to be deported. But stones, bricks and tiles cannot speak. They were marched down the main road to the station and then sent by train to the Terezin ghetto. I have no way of imagining what those days of waiting were like. And there was no way of sending out messages. But there are people alive who were there with them. Liza Mikova was 20, a little older than Martin, when she was sent to Terezin, on the same transport as the Wels family. Liza survived Terezin, Auschwitz and Mauthausen. She does not remember Rudolf, Ida and Martin, but it's quite possible that they met. Today she lives in the Jewish retirement home in Prague, Hagibor. I also meet her roommate, Marietta Smolkova, who had been sent to the ghetto 6 weeks earlier. They talk about how they were made to gather by the trade fair palace. Both remember that they were kept there for 3 days with nothing more than the 50 kilos of luggage they were allocated. At some points, their memories differ, such as whether they slept on mattresses or straw. For each is haunted by her own memory of the place.
Šok to byl pochopitelně, ale nebyli jsme sami.
Vy jste se dala dohromady s partou dalších mladších.
But both remember how the younger people tried to help the older ones.
A pak se právě šlo v pěti stupech.
Then they were walked in columns of 5, 1,000 people down Veletržní street to Bubny station. Passers-by watched. The Jewish retirement home at Hagibor is quiet and modern and pleasant. After talking to Liza and Marietta, I go out and sit on a wooden bench in the well-kept garden. There's a fountain nearby and different rooms with balconies around. Sage and rosemary are growing in the bed in front of me, and I'm reminded of the big rosemary bush that grew outside my own parents' kitchen window. Rosemary for remembrance. A small group of old men and women are sitting nearby in the sun, speaking a mixture of Czech and German, just like the Wels family. I'm also reminded of Rudolf and the retirement home he designed in Karlovy Vary. When I came in, I had to show the contents of my bag at the entrance. There is heightened security at the Jewish retirement home.
Thank you for the card. Your good news brings us pleasure. Send our regards to our friends, the Stifters. We are holding up well.
From Rudolf Wels, TN837V, Magdeburg Barrack, Theresienstadt, 30th of March 1942. To Dr. Josef Polacek, 8 Belgická Street, Prague 12.
Tell everyone that Martin and my wife are well. I talk to them every day. Send Tom our congratulations on his first wedding anniversary. With love from the Wels family.
The 31st of March, 1942.
Dear Josef, our warmest thanks for every package. They reach us quickly and intact. We know that you will not forget us, and we are very grateful. There is nothing new here.
Ida, Rudolf and Martin spend a year and a half in Terezin. They are able to correspond with friends in Prague, and several of their short letters, written on postcards, longer letters were forbidden, have been preserved. In Prague's Jewish Museum, a further fragment of their life in Terezin survives, the so-called yearbook of the Hamburg barracks, where Ida and Martin were both living. They were kept apart from Rudolf.
We are the housing committee. Emma Goldscheider, Trude Steinhauer, Trude Klein, and myself, Ida Velsova.
The prisoners themselves are in charge of the day-to-day running of the barracks, and they try to make life in the ghetto as normal as possible. The yearbook, written in German, captures vividly the first year of the Hamburg barracks for women and children, up to the 17th of January 1943. It is full of illustrations, some of them probably by Martin. There are chapters devoted to different aspects of ghetto life. Ida's job is to find space for the new arrivals.
My home is my castle, 70 centimeters wide. For a year now, this old barrack that used to house soldiers has been full of women's laughter and children's tears. On 18th January 1942, the first women arrive in the Hamburg barrack. Young, good-looking women who were used to a comfortable life, arriving with a few bits and pieces left to them. A child in their arms. Each one of them has a home somewhere. A 1, 2, or 3-room flat with a bathroom and central heating. Here they have a space strewn with straw, often unheated, cold and as bare as a January morning. There is no point sighing or complaining. 20 have to fit into one room. Our hardest task is to persuade the newcomers that it's at all possible to fit into 70 centimeters for living, washing and cooking. Bit by bit, they get used to it. And in the end, at the end of an extremely hard shift, we hear laughter and sometimes even a song. The first transports are leaving for Poland and are leaving huge holes in our barrack life. Old new friends leave. Thanks to our shared suffering, we make friends quickly. The gaps are filled by newcomers. Each newcomer is greeted with a certain suspicion. We're a bit jealous of them, that they had more time at home. But we try to house women with shared interests next to one another. And they quickly get used to the company here. That makes life bearable, with a hint of comfort. A little town is created, in one big building. The Jewish woman deserves our full praise. Once spoiled, but now full of patience and energy, strength and endurance, full of culture and humor. She bears her fate with courage.
Transport number 2766, 6th of September 1943, from Terezin to Auschwitz. 2,451 people are deported to the so-called family camp in Auschwitz-Birkenau. 11 of them will survive the war.
Today we have started working. Rudolf, Martin and myself. Please write to us. Let us know how you all are. Say hello to everyone. We are well. Regards, Ida.
All three of us arrived yesterday, and they put us to work straight away. You can write to us. 1,000 greetings from the Vels family.
When you see the postcards, it's written in such a way that it's just so unlike the way Rudolf writes. It's written more like a telegram. And with very little information, actually, in it.
We have been in the camp for 10 days. It is still being built. We are well and are working a lot. I hope the weather will not get colder. Our regards to all our friends and acquaintances. We think of you so often. With best wishes, the Vels family.
There's so much more here that he could have said about his situation, but I imagine that he was very restricted in what he was allowed to say. So,
a life reduced to a few words, like a telegram.
Well, people who were have been completely diminished.
And here it's one of the very last ones, isn't it? That you can, even the handwriting is scarcely legible.
And just very few words and very little information. Mm. Yeah, it's really actually quite hard to read from an emotional point of view.
Make sure that our friends think of us often. We are well. Yours, Ida.
I had no idea how these letters survived, or who Josef Polacek was, the person to whom they were addressed, until I found another letter in the box in Colin's house. It is written in English. From Dr. Josef Polacek, Belgitska 8, Prague, to Tomáš Vels, 2nd of November, 1966.
Dear Mr. Vels, I got acquainted with your parents in Karlsbad between 1926 and 1930. Only dimly can I remember you and your brother as little boys. By chance, I met your parents in Prague in 1939. Your father was in a bad mental mood, in contrast to your bright-minded mother. Your brother was a very good-looking, handsome boy. One day in 1942, I heard that your parents had been sent on a transport. I got a few cards from them and tried to help them as well as I could. Near the end of the war, even I was sent to Terezin and luckily survived. Some time ago, going through my war correspondence, I decided to destroy many letters of these terrible times, I found the cards of your parents from the concentration camps. I think that the enclosed cards are the last sign of your parents. I doubt that they were able to write to you in any way. Yours faithfully, Josef Polacek.
On the 8th of March, 1944, all those who had arrived at the family camp the previous September were murdered in the gas chambers. 3,792 people in the course of 24 hours.
Martin, have you been up to something? Own up. Better out than in. Raus mit der Wahrheit. You know, I always find out anyway. Truth will out.
No, I haven't done anything. It's just that I love you.
Du bist mein süßer Bitzelbatzel. How about that homework?
My mother, especially with her one sister, Noemi, they always, when they met, they remembered verses and they always felt guilty that they didn't help them somehow or they didn't hide Martin. It didn't happen, unfortunately, but they never forgave themselves that they didn't do more.
But this is not the end. Tomáš Vels survived. He spent the whole war in Britain, together with his English wife, Joy. He won a scholarship to study engineering in Swansea, and then he served in the Royal Air Force, Coastal Command, 311 Czechoslovak Squadron. And he lived.
After the liberation in 1945, Tomáš had no news about his family, and so he went straight to Prague and to Stifters, and he found out what happened to his family, that they didn't survive. He came by car, and so he took the documents and some of the pictures and things he could take, he took, and he brought it to his house in England, put it in a cupboard, and lived his new life.
Tomáš did not talk about the past, but he took care to preserve all the family things that he had brought back from Prague. This made it possible for the next generation to pick up the pieces and for us to tell the story. Nearly every word that we have heard in this serial was preserved in that box. And this is not just the record of a crime, but also a celebration of a family's achievements and a journey right back to their roots in the Czech countryside. It was with his great-grandfather Šimon's memoir, Uber Natu, that Colin's search for his family began.
Families have their family tree, which is a very thin description of what actually families are about. What the book did for us was actually made it so colourful. The real lives of people and what actually went on and how they thought and what they did.
At the request of my children, Rudolf, Aninka and Otto, I sat down one quiet evening and started sorting through the memories of my own life and the lives of my parents.
It takes it from facts that people died, which is a sort of dry fact, into a very human fact, and one can imagine oneself being in that sort of situation, because the story of their lives is all filled in, not just bare facts.
I wrote down these fragments on scraps of paper or on clean pages torn out of my children's old exercise books. And one incident in my memory would call forth the one before and the one after. In just a few weeks, there was already a good handful of such scraps.
It's an unusual thing for a family to have a chronicle like that, and it's so beautifully written as well.
I sought among these memories, as one does when raking over the dying embers in a stove, and I observed just how eventful and interesting can be the life of even the least and most lowly of human beings. It is my hope that always one member of each succeeding generation will continue writing things down, recording their experiences, their sorrows, and their joys.
I think what most probably makes it unusual is that it's not about kings and queens and important rulers. It's about everyday, really very poor folk, but written in a way that one can really relate to. And it's a huge pride, actually, that this person managed to get down what their lives were about. I think there's a lot of pride in that.
The pride that you feel in your great-grandfather.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And my grandfather for getting it all written down as well. It feels very special.
As I've researched into Colin's family, I've realised more and more that this reconnection with the family's past is a two-way process. When the family was all but wiped out, a part of Central Europe's own memory was also lost. The fragments in Colin's box are also a missing piece of Czech history. Not long after Colin rediscovered the manuscript of Šimon's memoir, Jerry Turner's wife, Alice, travelled to Prague to visit her mother. This was in 1987, 2 years before the fall of communism.
She decided to take a photocopy of the manuscript with her. While she was in Prague, she visited a close friend of hers, Zbigniew Hajda, who was one of the first signatories of Charter 77 and a publisher of samizdat literature. Alica asked him if he'd like to see the manuscript, and as usual he had lots of manuscripts to read, but he said leave it here. And the very next day when Alica visited him, he said, leave this with me, it's an absolute gem, I want to publish it. So sometime later that year, we received a postcard from Prague with just the words, Šimon's baby is here.
For many years, my life, to outside gaze, appeared monotonous, but I am grateful for it to the great providence. And remember, my dears, those of you who will be the continuation of my life, there is no light without shade, and there is no night so dark that it is not followed by the dawning of a new day.
The book, brimming with humanism, humour and openness, tuned in to the spirit of the events that came with the Velvet Revolution in 1989, exactly 70 years after Shimon had written Ubernatu. Again and again, as I've researched for this series, I found that the past and present overlap. There are threads that pass through the Vels family, threads that even Nazi Germany failed to cut.
I suppose you could sum it up as a humanist approach to life. It seems to be a thread that runs right from Shimon right through to his great-grandsons.
Can we eat yet?
Heavens no. Lunch won't be for another 3/4 of an hour. Martin, how about that homework?
I've just been writing to Tom on that subject.
It's been a while since we talked about that other remarkable book in the Vels family archive, Sancta Familia. In December 1938, on the eve of events that were to wipe out their world forever, Tomáš and Martin achieved something quite remarkable. They preserved something of the very essence of the world they lived in.
Huh. It really isn't there.
See? You rascal, you rogue, ragamuffin.
Well, what can I do when Mom keeps moving things around all the time and then chucks everything in here? This place is such a mess.
Just keep looking.
The book is made up of everyday scenes. But it is in the everyday that our lives have meaning. And when the everyday is lost, the little patterns that make up our lives, then everything else is lost with it.
Comment trouvez-vous cette famille après avoir fait sa connaissance?
Sancta Familia ends with a few sentences which Martin writes to his family in French. Why in French is not clear. Perhaps his mother told him that he needed to practice. She was always reminding him of his homework. Or perhaps he had a feeling that the words themselves would enable him to travel, to be free. Or maybe the distance of a foreign language made it possible for him to touch on fears that it would be too painful to express directly in his native Czech or German.
How do you find this family, now that you've got to know them? I think they are really nice and amusing. A father making jokes and losing all his authority, which really bothers him. A mother who tries to be educational, but is sometimes like a little girl. One son who is cunning, and another whom we only know from afar. It is a family full of harmony when everyone is joking together, but quite capable of tearing itself apart when a fight breaks out. A family as it should be. It is nothing to fear for the future, but let us hope that before long it will find a new place to live, to carry on this play in peace and quiet. The family.
No word from Martin has reached us from Auschwitz. But three poems are preserved, written by a Czech girl of almost exactly the same age. Her name is lost, but we know that, like Martin, she was killed in the gas chambers on the 8th of March, 1944. Here is one of those poems, in Jerry Turner's translation.
No, there are no rotting crosses on our graves, and there are no arching tombstones. No, there are no wreaths or wrought metal grills or angels with heads inclined, willows and a wreath with golden thread, a candle that burns eternally. We moulder in pits smothered in lime, the wind rustles in our bones. Bleached skulls of hopelessness quiver on the barbed wire, and our ashes go to the four winds scattered in thousands of urns. We make a chain around the earth, seeds dispersed by the winds. We count the days and years, we wait, time doesn't hurry us. And there are more and more of us down here. We swell and grow day by day. Your fields are already bloated with us, and one day your land will burst. and then we'll emerge in awful ranks, a skull on our skulls and bony shanks, and we'll roar in the faces of all the people, we the dead accuse.
Thank you.